95.5 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1, Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1, Mission Viejo. A service of California State University, Northridge, and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
Hey, I'm Carmel Holt, and welcome to Shiro's Radio. This hour was created to give you a chance to hear something that you may not even be aware you're missing. Women's voices in song and conversation. In radio, the majority of songs you'll hear and conversations you'll hear in any given hour will be by a man or a male-led band, and most often presented by a male radio host. In fact, 90% of radio program directors in the United States are male. So each week, we give you an hour that turns up the volume of femme voices across genres and generations. You'll hear music and interviews featuring the trailblazers and the new visionaries, hosted, produced, and powered by women. This radio revolution starts now.
August in the heat, sweaty in the street, tilt-toe whirling,
whirling, whirling.
I can feel your eyes, find me in the crowd, think you like me now. I've been seeing you every day, on my block in your white tee. You're looking pretty fine to me, so why are you waiting?
Get on it. get on. I've got to catch, catch. Catch the first train home. I've got to get on. First train home. I've got to get on. First train home. I've got to get on.
2022 single, Pure Love, from Flock of Dimes on Shiro's Radio. And check out my recent conversation with Jen Wozner in the archives at shirosradio.com. Also wishing the incredible Imogen Heap a very happy 45th birthday on December 9th with her 2009 song, First Train Home. Welcome to Shiro's Radio, my friends. I'm your host, Carmel Holt. So great to see you as always, as together we turn up the volume of women's voices in song and conversation for the next hour. And stay with me for this week's Shiro interview with Kaneen Pipkin of The Lone Bellow. Now marking the birth of one of the founding Shiros of rock and roll, Big Mama Thornton, born December 11th, 1926.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more. You told me you was high class, but I can see through that. Yes, you told me you was high class, but I can see through that. And daddy, I know you ain't no real cool cat. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door.
when I hear you call my name. Brings me the feeling that I love so much. You can be fire or sugar sweet, like honey, like honey. When you want.
The incomparable Joan Armatrading and Like Fire from her 1976 self-titled album. She turned 72 this week on December 9th, just a couple days after Big Mama Thornton's birthday. I'm Carmel Holt, and next up, it's a not-to-miss Shiro's interview with Kaneen Pipkin of The Lone Bellow. Stay with me.
For the price of one coffee a week to wake you up, you could subscribe to the SoCal Sound and awaken everyone to exciting public radio. Subscribe today at thesocalsound.org.
When you support the SoCal Sound with a year-end donation, we'll thank you with a pair of passes for Yuletide Cinemaland at Heritage Square in Los Angeles now through December 23rd. Enjoy classic holiday movies like Elf, Nightmare Before Christmas, and Home Alone, plus a twinkling light tunnel, food trucks, and a tour of Victorian homes dressed up for the holidays. Make your year-end contribution online now at thesocalsound.org and pick up your passes for Yuletide Cinemaland while supplies last.
One way to ensure this holiday season is merry and bright is to donate a vehicle to the SoCal Sound. Vehicle donations can bring hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars to support the programming you rely on every day. Thanks in advance. Simply call 877-527-6123 7 days a week or fill out a quick online form at 885fm.careasy.org to get started. In most cases, your vehicle can be scheduled for pickup within 3 business days. Many thanks to Steve Morris, Marilyn Mitchell, and Megan Ford for their recent vehicle donations.
Music chosen by humans, not algorithms. This is the SoCal Sound.
You're listening to Shiro's Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt. Over the last couple of years of interviews I've done for Shiro's, there's just a handful that focus in on a band member, not the front person, putting a spotlight on someone not usually given one. The Lone Bellow is a trio that was formed about a decade ago in Brooklyn with singer-songwriter Zach Williams, singer and guitarist Brian Elmquist, and singer and multi-instrumentalist Kanine Pipkin. Their acclaimed self-titled debut arrived in 2013, followed quickly by their Americana Award-nominated 2014 album, Then Came the Morning, produced by Aaron Dessner of The National, who would return as their producer on their fourth album, 2020's Half Moon Light, the follow-up to their Dave Cobb-produced third record, Walk Into a Storm, which coincided with the band's relocation to Nashville. Throughout the Lone Bellow's career, Kanine has been their vocalist, co-writer and composer, mandolin player, bassist and keyboardist, and now, as the Lone Bellow return with their fifth effort and first self-produced album, Love Songs for Losers, she adds another title to her resume, vocal producer. I'm so thrilled to welcome Kanine Pipkin as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Kanine Pipkin, welcome to Shiro's Radio. It's so great to see you.
I know. How's it going?
It's going good. I'm so excited to have you here. I've never gotten to interview just you.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't ever get to be interviewed by myself and feels unnatural to talk about me.
When was the last time you did an interview on your own?
Oh my goodness. I honestly cannot remember. I think I've done like maybe a couple, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I'm so inarticulate and boring.
That is not true. I know that to not be true. Congratulations on the new album.
Thanks. Thanks. Proud of it.
Tell me everything about Love Songs for Losers, Kanine.
Oh, man. So it was the first time we didn't have a big name that we brought in to produce it. And we produced it ourselves along with a friend of ours that lives in Nashville, Jacob Suter. Brian really, during lockdown, got into producing. And I think he was the one who was like, we can do this. And I was like, yes, absolutely. Please let me actually produce vocals and make you guys do takes and like, let's work on that part. Cause funny, like most albums we do, the producers are like, oh, you guys are like such a vocal band. You got that. And we'll do it. It's almost always an afterthought. It's always been a little bit frustrating for me because it's something that you can really dive so deep into. And because I know what the guys can do, cause I have sung with them every night for over a decade. So that was like the most fun part for me is getting to plumb the depths of vocal land.
So you said it was fun. Like, you think that you want to do a thing, but then yeah. Like, how is it an actual practice getting into that with your bandmates? You've been together yeah. for a decade. Suddenly you're in this role.
Yeah.
That's new.
It was by and large a great experience. I think I definitely hit a few walls with them that I was expecting to hit. And so it didn't really deflate me. And I think my skin is just so much thicker and I'm so less easily offended or emotionally damaged by what they do, I guess, because I know their intentions now. You know, when you're starting out in a relationship with people, the way they say things or what they say, you're like, that's so hurtful and insensitive. And now that I know them both, I'm like, okay, the way you're saying this and what you're saying is divergent from what your actual intention, what your actual heart is. So it's easy for me to kind of brush it off. And I think I just have a lot more confidence in my abilities and all that. So it makes you a lot less easy to set off and makes you more tenacious, at least for me. But it was fun. I think any creative act, especially making an album, it can feel like such a Herculean feat. And it feels like you have to put out so much energy just to organize the people involved. And I think especially having a trio, it's like we all have to be on board and it can sometimes just be so difficult to get anything done. But I always feel so proud of us when it's actually happening that I don't really mind if it's difficult or if it's bumpy or if we fight or whatever, because it's just like we're doing it. This war of art with all this contested space, we're making it happen and we're still making it happen, because the easiest thing is to just stop and to do nothing. And the hard thing is to take it seriously, take your art seriously, take yourselves not too seriously, but seriously enough to like get your shit together.
Yeah. Do you want to pick a song from the new album to start with?
Start with Honey.
It was written by Zach, right?
Brian and I helped finish it. That was a song. Oh gosh. It was like, I remember my son was a baby and we were on the bus at the end of a tour and we were writing in the lounge and Zach brought that out and it was real like old school strummy G chord type and it had a totally different chorus and the vibe was not there yet. But the idea was always something that we were like, oh, that's fun. A bit more of a pop writing approach, a bit more universal than Zach usually leans or can lean. And we kind of batted it around for a while. That song I love because it's such a testament to studio magic. All during lockdown, we were all in each other's bubble and Brian, Zach and I would just get together in this big church that was empty because no one was meeting. And we worked on that song a lot, but it was still kind of like folky, a little bit strummy. And then when we got into the studio, I think once that key part and just like the bass rhythm hit, that song just took on a totally different life and vibe. And I think everyone was kind of astounded. And it's one of those things you don't know is going to happen until you start tracking. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the way we were able to capture the vocals and the dynamics and all that. It was a really fun ride for me.
What does that look like when you're producing vocals? What kinds of feedback or direction are you giving? And is there anything specific to this song that we could learn about before going into it?
So I always say singing live and singing in the studio are two almost completely different skill sets, because the microphone and the way that you work a microphone when you're live as opposed to when you're recording is so different. And the room for nuance is almost limitless when you're recording for the studio. You can sing so quietly, and because of compression and because of all these tools we have, the amount of things that you can capture that would just be lost if you have a big band behind you and you're singing live. So I think a lot of it is about being a very positive coach, because most singers and the voice are very temperamental, you know? And so if you start feeling like, ugh, I can't hit it, or ugh, it's just like not a great day, or this is not working, you can hear their vocal cords literally tense up. And luckily for me, with Zach and Brian, I know their voices so well, I know what I want from it. So it's like being like, yes, that was great. Do that again, maybe with a little bit of this. And I think for us, the real challenge and the real success for Honey is the quiet singing and the delicate singing. And that's my bread and butter. I love that stuff. Even though I do belt and I'm so freaking loud, the quiet breath control, low kind of gritty stuff is really what makes me happy to hear. And I think we really achieved that. Walking out.
That's Honey, the new album by The Lone Bellows. It's called Love Songs for Losers. We have Kaneen Pifkin here with us on Shiro's Radio. So one thing I really get excited about is this opportunity to be like, okay, it's just us now.
It's just us gals.
And find out what has it been like being the only woman in this trio all this time.
That's a question. Oh, man. It's something that I get asked all the time. It's odd. I used to just notice there was this phenomenon of a lot of bands were all dudes and one girl. I don't know. It's hard. Sometimes I would get into this mindset of, are we just a necessary decorative element or something? And people would always come up to me and be like, oh, you're going to like bury that other girl. And I'm like, I don't want to bury her. I want to be her friend and maybe like cry with her, because it's like so lonely out here sometimes. But it's funny how I feel like people want to put you into this competitive role. It's almost like people are saying there's only so many spots for women in this industry. And so you need to be the best, or you need to be like in some way better than the other girl in that other band. And I think I was very sensitive to that when we first started, and it was kind of debilitating. And now I just know that it's nonsense. And so I don't pay attention to that at all. And really do try to cultivate relationships with other female artists and other females that are in bands. But God, I mean, I could probably ramble on for
go for forever. It. That's what we're here to do.
I mean, I had a baby on the road. I was pregnant on the road. I've had my husband and family out. And now this last tour was the first full band one I've done without my husband on the road. He stayed home with our son. Every part of the journey has been different.
Could you say that things have, in a broader sense, changed at all? You've said in passing, like, it's lonely out here, which I definitely have heard. What are you seeing in the landscape of the music industry?
I mean, I will tell you, I feel like especially the younger generation, there are just so many more female or non-binary artists, and it's just kind of something that's around. And I think with the accessibility of music producing tools and all that stuff, I think everybody feels a lot more empowered and capable. I know so many more like young female producers now than when I was starting. So that feels amazing. And I think a real testament to that is we got to tour with Maren Morris for a couple months this year. And that tour was honestly pretty life-changing for me, in that half her band and crew are all women. And the environment it created was so wonderful, and everything was done at such an incredible level of efficiency and professionalism, but there was still this warmth and fun. And I was so endlessly inspired by it. It was like the first time I've ever been part of a big tour where I was just like, oh, I'm just like one of many women. I'm not just like that odd person out who people kind of feel like they need to change when I'm around or whatever. The work environment was really nice.
She's amazing. She's been on the show and we've talked about that, and she really has done that intentionally. And that's kind of what's necessary, I think, until it is normalized.
It's nuts. I mean, I've had so many people offhandedly just be like, oh man, I wish I could do what you do. Like, I can't believe your husband lets you do that, lets you be on stage in front of other people, like lets people like watch you perform. And I just want to be like, it's draconian. But little comments like that happen all the time. And I think it still is such a contested space for women. I had a girl I was taking a yoga class with at the Y talking about ageism and sexism and all that stuff. And I was like, I mean, a lot of it is just a lot of women, if they want to have kids and they want to have a family, they really feel like they cannot do that and tour. And I will say it is very difficult if you're not at a superstar level where you have a staff who's kind of helping you. If you are still kind of a DIY, scrappy band, it is hard, but you can do it. But it's definitely not easy. But none of road life is easy for men or women, I think. So I don't think it's an insurmountable obstacle.
It's not. But I always wonder, if we were centering women in this business, what a different job it would be. Can you imagine what green rooms would be like if if like this was all custom designed for us? You know, it's like, well, we got to make sure that there's tampons.
There's tampons like, in the bus. Like if we get a bus and the driver has like put some in the medicine cabinet or whatever in the bathroom, the amount of just like safety and visibility, I feel, is kind of incredible. Small gestures, you know.
Yeah. And just like making touring life, musician life available for women who choose to have kids. How about taking that barrier away? I'm so curious about that. And it's come up so many times in these conversations, of course, you know.
I was lucky. My sister came out and roughed the bus life. It was hard on her. But yeah, it's definitely very hard.
Let's go to another song on the album. I love the boys, of course.
Of course.
And your harmonies are incredible. But it's beautiful to just hear you.
Oh, thank you.
Do you want to talk to us about cost of living?
Sure. Oh, man. I'm pretty artful about dodging what the song is actually about. I do feel like as a woman, and maybe as the kind of person I am, I tend to like self-edit a lot. And this song I wrote over COVID, I had a really close friend commit suicide while I was on tour. And when I turned 30, we had a break in touring, and it was actually the day of his funeral. So on my 30th birthday, I like went to his funeral. And the last time I had seen him was at a show in Chicago where he was living. And I just remember he was in the crowd and there was like one stage light that was just like hitting him. So I could see him the whole show. And things he said to me that night and stuff afterward, I was like, I should have seen this coming. And I think that song is a song about grief. And it's a song about thinking you're pretty intuitive and then being blindsided when something happens. It's like, I think the first line, how could you rob me blind when I thought I was a navigator? I thought I could read the signs. So it's, yeah, just kind of a song about that feeling of something being taken from you and what do I do now? And also just kind of feeling like, God, I should have known. I should have seen it coming. Mm. So luckily the song sounds a lot more uplifting.
Listen, grief and death is a part of life. It's like,
I know, man. You know, letting go. Yeah, and it's that famous saying, if you can't say it, sing it.
How could you run me blind when I thought I was a navigator? I thought I could read the signs. You were sending up flares, red and gold everywhere. I remember my hand, thinking I had a chance, reaching out for a dance in the fire. Now I can't tell
I wanted to talk to you a little bit. This provides a great segue for this too.
Sure.
About songwriting. And you said something earlier that caught my ear when you said, you know, as a woman that you have a tendency to self-edit. And then you just followed it up by saying, if you can't say it, sing it.
Yeah.
In this band, how much of you and your story and your emotions make it into the lyrics, make it into the songs?
Yeah. I mean, we do a lot of co-writing and a lot more collaboration. And I think there is a lot of respect among the three of us. Like Cost of Living, I wrote to a track that a guy, Phil Barnes, sent me. And I wrote the whole thing, but it just resonated with the guys. It felt true. They were just like, it's great. And every song we kind of bring to the group. And if it's in a state of completion already, you know, we'll kind of go through it and be like, yeah, that feels true. Or then sometimes we'll each kind of contribute and make it to where it feels like something that resonates for each of us. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated, but I do feel like the best songs do rise to the top because there is such an intense gauntlet that it goes through. But it's a pretty loving process. You know, each album is different. I think this is our fifth full-length studio album. Oh my God. So I think this one has definitely a lot of me in it. And a lot of my thoughts. The last album, Half Moonlight, had a super personal song that I'd written about my mom. So even if it's not, you know, a song that I'm leading or like specifically have written, I think we have a cool thing going with our band to where everybody needs to kind of sign off and vibe with the material and all that. And it's how we do it. And I think it's how we've been able to be such close friends and bandmates for such a long time.
Do you find that that's enough for you as far as an outlet?
I think it kind of has been in the past just because I've been so maxed out. The first few years of the band were just like kind of exciting. I had just moved to New York from Beijing and moved to New York to go to pastry school, which I did, but we started the band right when I started school. So the first few years are all like such a blur and it was all just kind of like holding on to a train that was like taking off and you're just like, you know, flying off the back. And then kind of once that settled down a little bit is when I was pregnant and then I toured with my son until last year. He was like 4 and a half. And so honestly, I was just like hanging by a thread for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I remember it was like the night before leaving for tour. I was like packing all his baby stuff and I got really sick. I got like strep throat or something. I had like a crazy high fever. So I had to like haul myself to urgent care, got a steroid shot, and just, you know, next day. did the thing. And I was like, man, the things we do for the show to go on is like absolutely mind-boggling.
But, and as women, the things that we go through physically and still do it.
It's insane. Dude, I mean, I'm sure you've heard many tales of just like when you're nursing, and I just remember like having to pick outfits that would like make me feel good and make me feel stage ready. But then also I could nurse in, and also like if I got like milk all over myself, that wouldn't be too much of a problem. It's like a very intense list of demands. But I think recently, coming out of those first few, you know, the diaper years, coming out of it, I'm just like, oh, I do have a lot more that I want to say, and I do want to develop more solo material. Definitely something that I'm starting to focus on and find the time for.
Because I'm a DJ, I can't pass up a good segue. When you were talking about getting dressed to go out on stage and finding something that you felt comfortable in post giving birth. Oh man, this part of the conversation about how we present, and I'm going to put in air quotes, having to look a certain way or be sexy or our
or
internal stuff about that.
Or, oh man. Oh, Carmel, what are you trying to do to me? You know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with purity culture or that term. I don't know if you were raised in kind of like the modern evangelical movement.
Jewish.
Yeah, you're so lucky.
But you were.
Yes. Yeah. Raised in the South in a definite culture that idealizes the idea of women as pure, spotless, unsexual beings, I guess, until you get married. And then that all of that is just like reserved for your spouse. But you spend a lot of your energy growing up not being a what was described as a stumbling block to your brethren, you know? So you don't want to like cause people to feel things they shouldn't feel or whatever. So you end up obsessing and assessing the way you act, the way you talk, the way you dress, obviously. But all of that, you're like, am I like a Jezebel? That's just going to like ruin, you know, everything. Even though my parents weren't so much like that, I was just a perceptive child. And these are the lessons that were absorbed through the school I went to or the church or whatever, the culture around me, which was largely kind of that Southern evangelical.
This is in Virginia, right?
In Virginia, yes.
Yeah.
So I had done some theater and I had done a lot of singing groups, and people would always say things about me that made me very uncomfortable, that were meant to be like compliments, like, you know, like, oh, like your voice is so sultry, or your voice is so sexy, or your eyes are so sexy, or like your face or whatever. And it would make me feel so guilty, and it would make me feel just evil. It was a very complicated feeling. So I think even now, you know, I'll talk with like my brothers or, you know, men I feel comfortable with, and just kind of be like, you know, if I do a solo project, it's hard to know how I would want to even brand it, or the things I would want to sing about, or the way that I sing, because I have always been taught to be on hyper vigilant alert of what you're doing, how it's making other people feel. And I think just now, as I'm starting to get older and more mature, I'm just like, you know what? I can't control how other people feel. I can only try to figure out how I feel and talk about that, because I've just realized like trying to control the responses of people around you is crazy, and it will make you crazy, and it will make you edit yourself into oblivion. So it's still a lesson that I'm learning. And I think actually this past tour, I think in terms of like what I was wearing and stuff, I definitely have felt like the most empowered I've ever felt to just wear what I like and what makes me feel powerful. Because I'm sure most women talk about when you're stepping into the stage, it's like this character, this kind of like superhuman character of someone who is okay with all of these people looking at them and assessing them and saying things. There's like this weird kind of dehumanization that happens when you're in front of people. And we all do it to celebrities. You know, you watch a TV show and you're like, oh, she yada yada, or like just talking about people's appearances, things you would never say to your friends. So I know that that happens, but, you know, you have to choose to not think about that and instead choose like, how do I feel tonight? How do I want to present myself? And, you know, how am I feeling? I also got really into powerlifting over COVID. My little brother, who is just the most wonderful being, he was like, I think you would really enjoy this. And we had this gym, Praxis Strength in Nashville, I'm going to give them a shout out because it's a wonderful woman-owned gym that really focuses on strength training. And I had never done that before. The purpose of fitness was always like to be smaller or like to be thinner.
Right.
And it was the first time I'd ever had this experience of nobody was really concentrating on that. It was all about goal setting and getting stronger. And it was like, what can you do that you couldn't do before? And that was a huge path into just this empowerment for me. So I started lifting a lot and I still do a lot of like strength training on the road and stuff. But I have, in certain lights, I guess, very pronounced arm muscles, and people like have to comment on it. I had a lady yell at me like, "You're the female Hercules," during one set. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but I guess you're talking about like the size of my arm muscles. Or, you know, if you post a picture of yourself and you have any sort of musculature, people will just be like, ah, and it makes me realize it's just something that at least is uncommon enough or noteworthy enough that people feel like they need to say something about it.
How does that affect you, though?
You know, there's definitely been times when I'm like, maybe I need to like cut down on arm day. But usually I'm just like, whatever, I like being strong. I like being able to lift my like 80 pound base head by myself, you know, that's a great feeling. And you know, I'm not aiming for a certain aesthetic, but it's great to be strong. It feels good to focus on that.
And you could take that in more ways than one. I mean, it's amazing how there's always like some parallels, ways that we can work on our physical bodies that can also apply to the emotional side, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like it's okay to be strong, to have goals, to take up some
space.
You know, and it's fun, the process of unlearning all of those things, you know, don't speak until spoken to, and try to be like mysterious and coy or whatever, instead of being honest and comfortable with being a person in the room who is on equal footing with all the other people in the room.
It's amazing. I'm so happy to hear that that's where you're at. Kenene Pipkin, it has been so awesome to spend some time with you, and I could literally talk with you all day. Before we wrap it up, you want to pick another song off the new album, Love Songs for Losers, to take us out with today?
Sure. I think I want to play I'm in Love. I really love this song. You can usually tell if I was involved in the composition of a song because there will be either kind of an abrupt key change or a tempo change. I'm kind of a sucker for that. So the song has that and I love it. It's just kind of unhinged.
I'm in love.
Once again, Kenene Pipkin, thank you so much for being with me here on She Rose Radio.
It was so good to see you. Yeah, I think you're such an encouraging presence, and just so happy every time we get to talk. It's always really nice.
Aw, thank you. We should definitely do this again.
Yes, let's do it again.
Many thanks once again to Kenene Pipkin of The Lone Bellow for being with us. The new album, Love Songs for Losers, is available now on Dual Tone Records. Next, we close the hour with a guest DJ pick from this week's Radio Shiro, Taylor Wallace of KUTX in Austin, when Shiro's Radio continues.
I don't know who said it first, but do what you love is great advice. I'm Andy Chanley, and every afternoon from 2 to 6, I get to play you around 6 or so great songs as you drive home. I love doing that. And wall-to-wall music without a lot of talky-talk? That's pretty easy for you to love. Let's spend the afternoon together on 88.5 The SoCal Sound.
It's She Rose Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt. Last week, I produced the show before I found out that Christine McVie had passed away at the age of 79. I was just gutted to get the news. I've been a huge Fleetwood Mac fan my entire life. And as a radio DJ and radio listener, I can say with all certainty that the radio airwaves would not sound the same today, nor would they in the future without Christine McVie, who wrote so many of Fleetwood Mac's hits. But after I heard the news that she had died, one song kept popping in my head, and it's not one of her hits. It's the opening track to one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac albums, Tusk. playing that one in memory of the late, great Christine McVie, who passed away on November 30th at the age of 79. Over and Over, the lead track to Tusk. My name is Carmel Holt, and it's Shiro's Radio. I always love to close the hour by turning the mic and the music over to a fellow Radio Shiro of the airwaves. And this week, it's Taylor Wallace of KUTX in Austin.
As the year winds down, not only are you thinking about your favorite songs of the year, but you might also be thinking about your cuffing season playlist. No shame, no shame. I was introduced to this artist, Sheila, through our hip hop show, The Breaks. And phew, one listen, I am hooked. Smooth bars, a Miami dance beat, and a sultry attitude all wrapped up in leather and latex. So yeah, here's one for your cuffing season playlist. This is Soltera by Sheila.
Look at me. I was married for 20 damn years. I already told you. You have to have 2 or 3 or 4 boyfriends.
Échale, pa. Top and I go slow. Enfocada en mi plata, plomo. I don't let you hit it from behind with the chokehold. Stone cold killer, you ain't gotta worry about me. I carry my own piece if I want to. Slide through, I want you. Le posiche magnifique, make you never wanna leave after I'm through. Buena soltera, malas son ellas. Las que se vuelvan ciegas, solo con promesas bellas. Soy la princesa, una coqueta. Diamante en mi muñeca y nunca pago la cuenta. Soltera, mi sin pena mi manera, soltera mi manera, sin pena mi manera, soltera mi manera, sin pena mi manera, soltera mi manera, sin pena mi manera.
Mari body, I'ma let him take me for a ride in the Audi. And you know we better have me classy. Sipping on Don Julio is how I get nasty. ¿Dónde están los tragos? Dale papi, vamos. Te quiero ver en rodilla al lado de tu hermano. Solo por un ratito, como dijo Benito. Haz lo que te diga y te lo pasarás bonito.
Soltera, mi manera. Sin pena, mi manera. Soltera.
Closing this week's show with Sheila and Soltera, a guest DJ pick from this week's Radio Shiro, Taylor Wallace from affiliate station KUTX in Austin, Texas. Thanks to you for tuning in wherever you may be listening. Together, let's keep turning up the volume. Shiro's Radio is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. We get production assistance from Emma Philippos. Our original theme music is by Lucius. For more on Shiro's Radio, visit shirosradio.com. You can support the show with our Patreon. Check out the Shiro's shop for merch, great holiday gift ideas. Shiro's is also a podcast on the TalkHouse Podcast Network, so you can check that out wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. Until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.
88.5 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo. A service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.